Life often seems to be the process of handling demands that present themselves, rolling with the punches, so to speak. Boys and girls, as they develop, have urges that lead them to want to be intimate, to have intimate relationships, sometimes to include marriage, sometimes to include children. This situation can lead to the need to have private space and the requirement to pay for that space and anything else associated with maintaining that space, like associated services, electricity, if you will. And that leads to earning a living. So we get up in the morning, we go to work, we come home, we go to bed, and we do it again and again until we retire or die. That is what, for many people, what life seems like. But that is not what life is. We draw life force into us from conceptions right on up to the last minute, last breath in our physical life, when we die. What life forces we draw in, what we do with it, what we don't do with it, is up to us and our free will. When it comes time to use life force, we have a situation where there seems to be a battle for control. Our ego wants us to use life force to meet its four driving needs. Our human consciousness wants us to act in harmony with what we've learned to be our values and the rules that we should be following and the beliefs that we've acquired. Our soul wants us to act with unconditional love. It wants us to act in harmony with divine consciousness. Each of these viewpoints, or I'll say levels of awareness, draw demands to us and tell us how to handle those demands. I think we are far more causative, far more creative than just adopting the viewpoints that I'm going to try to handle as best I can what life throws at me. That viewpoint is reactive. It puts us at effect of the environmental signals that we perceive, that we encounter, that come up from us or come at us from all kinds of angles, from other people, and just from being in the environment. I've been thinking about extraordinary goals since a Thursday night open forum teleconference call that we had. I had asked Marianne to explain the difference between three levels of goals that she used in her consulting practice around the world. There were clear goals, stretch goals, and extraordinary goals. I think myself and other people play too small in life. And I think that's what happens when we just react to circumstances. As a result of that conversation and Marianne's explanation, I wondered what my extraordinary goals would be if I defined them. I quickly realized, though, I do have an extraordinary goal, but only one. Spiritually, I want to achieve Christ's consciousness. I want to be like Christ so I can help people heal like Christ did. That's an extraordinary goal. I am fascinated by the idea of a man like Leonardo da Vinci. What an amazing consciousness. Recently, I've been reading about Nikola Tesla. What an amazing consciousness. I'm also fascinated by Edward Leedskalnin. He's a Latvian who built the Coral Castle in Florida by himself, using, he said, the same principles that were used to build the Great Pyramids. He did it all by himself, moving rocks weighing many tons. Nobody can understand how he did it. He did it, and he thought other people could do it, although that information has never been made public. I'm also fascinated by Walter Russell, who achieve renown worldwide in 5 or 6 or 7 different areas based upon a third grade education, but an incredible level of consciousness. As I was thinking about this stuff, I realized that I had Christ as the role model of an extraordinary goal, but I didn't yet define extraordinary role models for the other 11 worlds that I use to characterize human activity. But I thought, I could use these 4 men, Leonardo da Vinci, Nikola Tesla, Edward Leed Skeldon, and Walter Russell, as extraordinary examples of mental development. I think they also had high spiritual development as well. I decided that, you know, I think it would be fun to identify extraordinary people for the rest of those worlds. Besides the spiritual world and the mental world, there was the emotional world, physical, family world, career world, financial world, social world, leisure world, community world, political world, and maintenance world. All of the 5 men that I mentioned have physically died, but their consciousnesses still live. What if I could draw, and Napoleon Hill in his book, Think and Grow Rich, says you can do this, what if I could draw some of their consciousness into my consciousness? Kind of like a tree that draws back into itself through its roots the recycled leaves that have fallen from the tree onto the ground and decompose, lose their physical essence, but maintain their energetic being. I could say that each of these 4 men were leaves on the tree of humanity. Clearly, they reach great heights, great levels of development in their spiritual and mental growth. When those physical leaves fell to the ground, we still had their related contributions, you know, the things that they've created in their lifetimes, and we have their consciousnesses still able to be accessed by us if we reach out for those. So then I moved on to thinking about extraordinary in terms of the emotional world. And I was not sure how to define this. But I did make a rule for my own definition of extraordinary, and it was this, that to be ordinary, to be extraordinary, to do extraordinary things and have extraordinary results, everything had to be grounded in love. Love had to be the basis of each of those things. If it's not grounded in love, I decided it wouldn't be extraordinary. It may be big, it may be famous, may be wealthy, there may be a large amount, but it wouldn't be extraordinary. I wondered if emotional extraordinariness was an emotional intelligence concept or a mental concept. I wasn't sure. Does a psychic have an emotional gift because they can perceive certain things, or is it a mental gift, or is it something else? I wasn't sure, and I'm not sure now. I also wondered if a comedian like Jonathan Winters or his protege Robin Williams, those guys have unbelievably enormous emotional ranges, or an actor like Meryl Streep or Robert De Niro or Daniel Day-Lewis, would they be considered extraordinary? Or was Mohandas Gandhi, Mother Teresa, or Abraham Lincoln emotionally extraordinary because those 3 could remain connected to divine consciousness even in the face of difficult, terrible, maybe even horrible circumstances? Then I decided for emotional extraordinariness, I was going to go for Gandhi, Mother Teresa, and Abraham Lincoln. as my examples. They would be my role models. Their consciousnesses were much more interesting and elevated as far as I was concerned. Models of physical extraordinariness seemed very complicated. I believe that musicians and painters, other artistic people, are physically intelligent, as are gymnasts, as are golfers, as are dancers like Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers, as are many other athletes, runners, and bodybuilders. But how would a person who is physically extraordinary be grounded in love? Would he or she use extraordinary physicality to grow people's sense of self, to nurture them, to heal them, through touch, to protect them from harm through their using their physicality as a protective energy field, and so on? Physicality may presuppose that we're touching something, but maybe the other senses are involved as well. When the Maharishi Mahesh Yogi, he was the founder of Transcendental Meditation, walked through the corridor of the airport, this was noted, that as he walked, the people sitting on either side of the corridors would spontaneously burst into tears as he walked by. As his energy washed over them, they would start to weep. Now, the question is, why? What meaning would you give to that? And I think it's because when you were in the presence of pure love, pure acceptance, that is such an unusual experience, how about extraordinary experience, from us, that it just causes us to have a tremendous release. That release showed up physically as weeping. Maybe that's what physical extraordinariness is. Complete lack of physical resistance. And it would seem to me that must derive from the lack of resistance in our spiritual world, in our mental world, and in our emotional world. Because when we don't have resistance, without resistance, seems like health and peace would be guaranteed for us. As adults, we may prioritize career and financial worlds before we start focusing on the family world. No doubt about it. Having a satisfying career in a field that we're passionate about, which produces enough money that we can support a family, that sounds like a great and wonderful foundation to have before starting a family. But as children, I'll bet your family and my family may not have been like that. It would have been great if our families had been extraordinary, but by common standards, they weren't. They were not. However, I'm thinking that if we focus on the moments of extraordinariness and we draw them in greater clarity, greater detail, greater significance to us, into our awareness, that we will find that there were examples of being extraordinary in our family. And if we do that, then that concept of being extraordinary in the family world will start to grow faster for us. I like the definition of love that was told to me by a mentor some years ago. He said, love was comprised of three characteristics: attention, respect, and appreciation. That's very easy to say, but pretty difficult to consistently apply. So many things, according to our ego, are demanding our attention. And it's easier to respond to threats than it is to things that are non-threatening. So devoting attention to, say, our children who want to be held or want us to read to them or want us to play with them, because that's not threatening, it's easy to postpone. The trouble is, this harms us due to that lack of expression of love, and it harms our children because they don't get the nurturing and nourishing that we could have delivered to them. Respect is your willingness to allow what is to be. You pretty much could say, what is. And most of us would agree with that. But it's what happens next, where we resist what is, where we fight what is, and we don't like what is, and we judge what is, and we battle what is, and we end up in a lot of stress and conflict. And when we do that to somebody else, when we don't respect that they are what is at that moment, then we can run into problems and conflicts. But we can avoid that boundary-crossing behavior of trying to improve or fix other people. Unless people ask for coaching, our input, our help, providing coaching is to step over that line. It's a violation of their boundaries, and it's a violation of their identity. But we take it upon ourselves, our egos coaching us all along, that we're superior, so we can deliver this input. After being able, though, if we can achieve that level of putting our respectful attention on a person or thing, we can look for aspects to appreciate. Looking for things to appreciate in others is worlds apart from looking for things to criticize or fix. You know, it's kind of like, and we have the same experience with ourselves, no doubt, over the years, of looking in a mirror, and 99.9% of our skin looks fine, but that's not what we're seeing. That's not what we're looking for. That's not what we're noticing. That's not what grabs our attention. It is this minuscule flaw, this zit, this blemish, this, you name it, that's what we see. That's what threatens us. But wouldn't it be nice if this type of love, attention, respect, and appreciation had been the norm instead of a rarity? But we can still sift through our experiences for those moments in which we felt extraordinary. And it's not too late to take that definition of love and apply it to ourselves, because we have that right and we have that responsibility today to do that. But we can apply it to ourselves, we can apply it to our grown children, we can apply it to our pets, our friends, clients, strangers. Attention, respect, and appreciation. We are clearly not all the same, nor do we want to be. Respecting and appreciating that uniqueness goes a long way to help us move toward being extraordinary. Extracting extraordinariness from our family of origin, those experiences, no matter how rare they were, can position us to be more successful in a career, delivering value for ourselves, for our company, to other people. All we have to do is find at least one experience in our lives in which we received positive attention without strings being attached. One time. One experience where we were respected. Just one. And one experience of being appreciated. Those three experiences, they didn't even need to come from our mothers or fathers. They could have come from any number of people. Anyone could have been the delivery system of that energy to us. All we have to do then is to focus on those vibrations of any one or all three of those experiences and go into harmony with them. We go into harmony with them, we start attracting more of the same. As we start to resonate with that high vibration of attention or respect or appreciation or all three, more experiences of a like vibration will come to us. The nuclear family, I think that's defined as mother, father, children, that nuclear family can serve as the training ground of values. This is where we learn a lot of values. It's where we, well, should be learning values, where we learn social skills and etiquette and other things so that we can go out into the larger family, the family of man. We take those values, those beliefs, those habit patterns, those mindsets, those attitudes out into the family of man, and we try to make extraordinary contributions. And for many of us, the people we work with, they become like another family. We take what we learned at home into the work environment where we apply it, get results, some better, some not so good. We learn from those energy exchange experiences, and then we adjust, and then we apply what we've learned again and again. This is what I describe as the cycle of learning. We exchange energy with an object of our attention with a specific intention. We get results. That is, we cause effect. We cause those effects, and then we decide, no, that was desirable, that was less than desirable, could have been better, could have been worse, this, whatever. And then we pull our energy back, and we can do that consideration that I just exhibited, and we decide on what to do next, how to adjust. And then we engage again using the new rule that we just decided upon based upon the results that we just achieved, that last interaction. And that interacting, pulling back, thinking it through, making a rule, re-engaging is what we do all the time. Work can be like sports, and for most people, it serves as the main arena of social and economic development. It's somewhat strange to me that people who have amassed tremendous wealth don't use it to do extraordinary things for the family of man. They just acquire enormous wealth for themselves. If the basis of a career or economic activity is the acquisition of wealth and the accumulation of material things, material objects, that road is not headed toward what I would label extraordinary. That road is labeled ego and self and other things, perhaps, of a lower vibration. Using the 9 items listed in the Truth of Existence in letter 1 of the Christ letters, growth, nutrition and nourishment, healing, protection, fulfillment of need, work, survival, rhythm, all within a system of spiritual law and order, the law of cause and effect, as the model of worthwhile human activity. It's worthwhile divine consciousness activity, like, I wonder if it's below my pay grade. No, I think that's what we should aspire to. So if that's what we use as a model of worthwhile human activity, it would seem obvious to me that taking everything for the self without regard to anybody else is contrary to that model. Divine consciousness is modeling divine love. Here, have this, have this, have this, have this, have this, have this, have this. And grow in your awareness, grow in your awareness, grow in your awareness. Balancing your own self-interest with the self-interest of others at home, at work, at play seems to allow a greater flow of divine consciousness, divine energy, divine love into our lives, into our bodies, and into our activities. It's funny in the political, funny odd that in the political climate in the United States, the disenfranchised are considered by the overfranchised, the really, really wealthy, to be cancer-like because they require more resources than they produce. That's the point of view. But it seems to me now that the overfranchised, the people who have loopholes and get away with stuff and take advantage of the system and can buy influence and power, they require more resources than they produce. That makes them cancer-like. An extraordinary cell in the body would be a cell that does its job and supports other cells trying to do their jobs. Now, it's clear that cells in the body have different roles depending on what their characteristics are like or what tissues or organ they're a part of. You know, a cell in the bicep of your arm is different than the cell in your liver or your heart. No cell could be considered to be or said to be extraordinary if it had no sense of the other cells in the body. A cell's willingness to communicate respectfully and cooperatively to the other cells in its network, if you will, in its system for the good of the whole, would be essential in order to be considered an extraordinary cell. That's how cells are designed to be that way. In terms of the financial world, I don't know of a person who would fit as an extraordinary financial model. Now, we have plenty of examples of robber barons and takeover artists and, you know, spin-off and merger specialists and so on, and who amass enormous wealth and in their later lives shift their their competition-crushing behaviors, and they become philanthropists. Maybe Thomas Watson, the founder of IBM, fits the description of an extraordinary financial model. The Walton family of Walmart infamy would not fit. That family is more like a group of farmers who won't feed their cattle. They just milk them. I decided I need to search for examples of people who are famous for creating jobs in business. Creating work, that's one of the elements that Christ talks about. Creating work is so important to divine consciousness. It ought to be important to us. When I think about the career fields that could support a person who wants to be extraordinary, I go back to growth, nutrition and nourishment, healing, protection, fulfillment of need, work, survival, rhythm, and the law of cause and effect. Every one of those areas would be a suitable field to grow into being extraordinary. In each field, being extraordinary would involve what? An extraordinary connection to divine consciousness and the allowing of divine consciousness to work for us, in us, and through us, for our good and for the good of other beings. Being extraordinary in any one of those fields may require the awareness that we are a connecting link, a conduit between divine consciousness and the objects of our attention, other people, other beings, other things. We're in between, and we're required for that flow of divine consciousness to those others. Be nice, because as we do that, divine consciousness is working for us, in us, and through us. We can understand that what we offer through our attention and intention and words and feelings and thoughts and actions are all the result of drawing in divine consciousness, divine energy, divine love. We translate it. Every one of us is translating it. We're translating that energy according to our level of consciousness, and then we express it according to our level of consciousness. And what we express returns to us as a harvest. Being extraordinary is to allow divine consciousness to work for us, in us, and through us at extraordinary levels with an extraordinary lack of resistance. As love is expressed through us, we can count on extraordinary things happening. Our doing becomes extraordinary. The results we have become extraordinary. Simply put, being extraordinary is the awareness of being an instrument of divine love in this lifetime. Doing things that foster love for and in others, not for ego gratification, not for that need for self to accumulate, would all be considered extraordinary. All of us have extraordinary potential to be extraordinary. I'd like to end this service with a prayer. This is the pluralized version of the prayer from Letter 8, In Christ Returns Reveals Startling Truth. Father, Mother, Life, you are my life, my constant support, my health, my protection, my perfect fulfillment of every need, and my highest inspiration. I ask you to reveal the true reality of yourself to me. I know it is your will that I shall be fully illumined, that I may better receive awareness of your presence within and around me. I believe and know that this is possible. I believe that you protect and maintain me within perfect love. I know that my eventual purpose is to express you. As I speak to you, I know that you are perfectly receptive of me, for you are universal, loving intelligence, which has so marvelously designed this world and brought it into visible form. I know that as I ask you to speak to me, I am sending out a consciousness searchlight into your divine consciousness, and as I listen, you will be penetrating my human consciousness and coming ever closer to my increasingly receptive mind and heart. I commit myself and my life into your care. Thank you. It is so. Amen.